This is the House of Pop Culture. I'm Anthony Donovan.
Amy Meredith.
Durwood Murray.
And Joe Reese.
And for the next hour or so, we're going to be talking your face off about all things pop culture related. From the time that the immortal words at the beginning of history were uttered, Marconi plays the mamba, listen to the radio. What? Technology has played a vital role in all things pop culture. I'm going to turn the show over to Amy Meredith. Thank you and good night.
I'm scared.
You can do this, Amy.
So
we believe in you.
No, it's fine.
Take off our shirts.
Will that make you feel more comfortable? Please don't.
I'm flexing for you.
I got some quarters I can throw at you.
I need laundry. Sure.
So tonight we are discussing technology's role in pop culture. You're going to put your thinking caps on, boys.
So okay. We're talking about like the robot from Lost in Space, right?
Yes.
Or the robot, the dance move.
Yes.
Or iRobot, that horrible Will Smith movie.
No. We'll never talk about that.
Other than the fact that it's a horrible movie.
And so, we kind of just did.
Because I feel that this is probably going to be the one that's going to suck up the most time. So let's get that one out of the way. Has the internet destroyed the music industry?
I hesitate to say that it has destroyed the music industry.
It's changed.
It has changed it dramatically. But I won't say it's destroyed it.
In my opinion, the only thing that has destroyed the music industry is the music industry.
Yep. Agreed.
The internet, the advent of the internet was not the cause, it was the effect. You know, it was record industries, the way record companies work, it's based in such a way where it's like it's like a 200% profit the way it's set up. And suddenly someone found a loophole, and that loophole, it hit them bad.
Mm-hmm.
So for the longest time, I think the music industry tried to fight that unsuccessfully because you can't put the cap back on that.
No.
Yeah,
but I think only in the last few years. And the last decade is where the music industry found a way to kind of make it work with that. Because you've got things like iTunes, you've got things like Amazon, you've got things like Spotify and other things like that.
I kind of agree with you, Anthony, but what I think that the internet's biggest effect on the music industry is the fact that now I think we see that a record producer / record label is not necessarily necessary.
Yeah.
And you see people like Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, who say what you will about their talent or whatever your opinion is on that, but they've won Grammys and sold how much without a record label?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so now we're seeing that you don't need that structure anymore. And I think the internet is
own
a
their
big
songs.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, how many artists do you hear about having to fight to own the rights to their song?
And how long do we hear that the internet was hurting the artist? And don't get me wrong, it definitely was. The internet was hurting the artist greatly. But now that
because
we're seeing
set up by
because of what the industry
yeah,
was.
Yeah, what I love, because the record industry is like, hey, you're fucking over your favorite artists, and that's kind of our thing.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
I mean, because when you think about it, until probably cassettes came along, when you just had LPs and then 8-tracks, there was no real easy way to copy music.
Right, you couldn't replicate it.
Absolutely.
So it just so, but once cassettes came around,
now, I just get this picture of like somebody in the back of a club with like a reel to reel trying to like,
but yeah, you know, pirate so once, a yeah, once you know, cassettes came around and people were making mixtapes, they were copying tapes and giving them to friends and whatnot, and then CDs came around and same thing, and it was just on a much, you know, just amongst your friends, so it was happening. It's just the internet made it so much easier to happen.
But I think though, with making a mixtape for your friend, or even making a CD for your friend, you had to actually purchase that music first.
But that's what happens with the internet. Just your friend just happens to be someone in Istanbul that bought it and then uploaded it to a torrent. And his, you know, 200,000 closest friends were able to access it.
I think the thing that I like, because for a long time I had some pretty unpopular opinions regarding downloading of music, because I am the child of a musician, and the music that he played fed me and put a roof over my head. It supported our family. So the idea that someone, you know, you literally are taking money from someone the way it was structured back then, like with Napster's initial thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, yeah, you were screwing over the artist. I like now that I have the option of, as Durwood has said many times in the past, throwing my money at something I like and support.
Yeah.
I like that there are artists that I will always pay for their music because I support what they do. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think, you know, I don't think Madonna is gonna, you know, is like hurting for my 99 cents off of iTunes, but I am such a fan of hers that yes. I want the authentic thing anyway.
I agree with you on that.
But
yeah.
The other thing when you think about it that sucks is, especially if it's someone that you've been a fan of for so long,
mm-hmm.
and you've bought that album on vinyl, you've bought yep. it on cassette, you've bought it on CD,
mm-hmm.
and then what, you have to buy it again, you know, for a digital, I mean, or you rip it. But, you know, I mean, that's a different, but, you know, they expect you, but the, technically, ripping it is illegal.
Yeah, yep. No, you're absolutely
so,
right.
So, you know, if you want a digital, if you want to play this album that you have already purchased at three different occasions or more because mm-hmm. you lost the CD or cassette yeah. or got scratched or left in the sun or...
Or corroded, which has started to happen to some of my older CDs.
Yeah, so you have to buy it again. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's, I mean, how often are you expected to buy something?
I've bought Purple Rain three different times.
Yeah.
And well, Prince, and, thanks you for it.
And also, you know, for me, I am so not about to sit here and say that I've paid for every single thing I've downloaded off the internet because that's preposterous. I have thousands. I have, you know, I have come into possession of a lot. Well, because my favorite artist is Prince, and yeah. he is the most bootlegged artist of all time.
Some of his shit's just not available for sale, right?
This is true.
The majority yeah. of his stuff.
There's a lot of stuff that I would happily pay for if it were available through a traditional legal outlet.
Hey, you know, Prince, if you come over to us right now, we're a podcast, we'll give you money for the stuff that we've bootlegged. Not that we've bootlegged anything so far. Yeah. I don't mean that. I'm saying if theoretically we bootlegged it, we'll give you money for
but
it if you just come
if
over
there's, here. If there's something I want that I don't have the opportunity to buy, oh yeah, I will come upon a way to get it. Because and I have those ways, but you know, as I said before, if it's an artist that I want to support, and also look, I'm a music file, I'm a music fan, I'm a grown ass man with a full time job that pays my own rent. The $1.29 ain't gonna hurt me.
Yeah, yeah.
I will pay for the friggin' CD on iTunes if I like it.
And I will tell you, anytime you're wondering what to get Anthony as a gift. Oh, a $10 iTunes card is
or
like
higher.
His...
Or higher.
Yeah, but I'm saying you'll never see his face light up. Look, I've seen three different people at the same time give him iTunes cards. His eyes light up all three times.
Yeah, I love it.
I mean, the only thing is if you had it wrapped in a donut.
It's true. No, seriously, iTunes gift cards are great. But here's the thing. We're talking about iTunes like it's the end all be all. There are many other ways because a lot of people and a lot of and I can't wait to get sound engineer Joey's notes on this because a lot of audiophiles don't like iTunes. I mean, audiophiles with a pH, by the way. Because the bit rate isn't terribly high. I think it's like 128 or something.
It's made for you listening.
I have no clue what that means.
It's made for listening when you have it on your iPod or yeah. whatever, and you have just regular headphones in mm-hmm. or on your computer. The quality, while so much better than probably if you listen to it off your cassette, 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's not the highest quality where if you have
yeah. CDs are actually mastered at a higher quality than you will find music on iTunes.
Oh, shit.
Like
I didn't
regular
know that.
CDs.
Yeah.
And don't even get me started on if you have vinyl when played on a good stereo system that's well kept with the compression, you can't top it.
Mm. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like if you have a home stereo system that's like top of the line. You're not going to want to play just an iTunes because mm-hmm. you're going to notice that it is not the highest quality.
So yeah. people should stop looking at me sideways for still buying CDs?
No, of course not. No.
Okay, good.
Of course not. Actually, there's a lot of stuff. Like, I'm kind of sad. Like, speaking of Prince, you know, in the last 3 or 4 years, he's put out almost 2 dozen singles digitally, and I'm sad that I can't get a legitimate issue of them on CD.
That was going to be my next question to you guys. Is making an album even necessary now?
It depends on the artist.
Yeah.
It breaks my heart to say this, but no.
Oh, I disagree with you. I think
it's a singles-driven market now, but that's because nobody has any attention span anymore.
Commercially, it is, yes, a singles-driven yes. market, commercially, but there are artists out there. The Black Keys, I think, do a good job of putting out albums, and I'm sure there are a bunch of other ones, but they're just the first ones that come to mind. But don't get me wrong, those look, Justin Bieber, yeah, subsists on singles. But there are true artists out there who I think can still put out albums.
Yeah, I think you can.
The difference here is what I'm saying is, should put out an album, is it necessary to make it in the music industry today? Is it necessary?
But in the last 20 years, it hasn't been necessary.
But I think we're talking about art here. And now, I mean, by that rationale, is it necessary to do anything but a glitzy musical? Don't get me wrong, those are the ones that make the most money. But there's still room in our society for straight plays also, you know?
And, straight plays.
But yeah, so I think, is it necessary? Yeah. There's somebody out there who...
It hurt you a little bit, didn't it? Just to think
it really did, honestly, because I hate the fact that just because it's not as marketable, or it's not as commercial, yeah, we're going to say get, it's not...
It's not going to be like, you know, you're going to have... It's like... The new album from so and so is dropping. It's like, no, the new single from so and so is dropping.
It's always been a numbers game. They will go with what is profitable.
But I think albums will still exist because there's the curmudgeons like us that if you can make a good album, and then you look at even some of the older acts, and when I'm saying older acts, you know, bands that started in the early 90s or sooner, because you know they've been around for 20 years.
I remember
now.
Listening to Damn Yankees. Back in my day when Pearl Jam's 10 came out.
But, you know, you're going to have those fans that will still listen to a whole album by an artist.
Yeah, but I mean, it's...
So I don't... It's not the driving force anymore, mm-hmm. and I don't know how long it's been since it has been, because... it's so rare that...
Well, it became necessary for a while there, and that started in the mid-90s because the record industry, again, under their massive greed, discovered that if they stop distributing singles,
yes.
people will buy the whole album, and yeah. it will start to boost album sales.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
And, well, one thing that I like with iTunes now is more so specifically with soundtracks and whatnot... I found myself buying just shitty ass soundtracks or albums for one song. Now you can make your own mixtape. And then at the time, you know, it was, you know, $7.99 for like a CD or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's like, but now I can pay $1.29 for that one song.
And I also love that they've got Complete My Album. Like it's a discounted price. You can get cool. Like if they know if you've got two or three tracks off the album, yeah. you can complete it for, you know,
that's
that kind
cool.
of thing. But I like the fact that, you know, because radio isn't really a thing anymore.
Does anyone listen to the radio?
I do.
Do you? I listen to Pandora.
Pandora's a thing, but
yeah. I listen to radio.
I don't know the exact numbers on it, but I'd be willing to bet you that the residuals and the spins are not structured the same way that it used to be. It's not as profitable. So I think that...
So I only hear like the same six songs.
Yeah, because but with something like iTunes, it makes me happy that I can at least ensure... That, especially for independent artists that are on there, that my money's going directly to them.
Yeah.
Because that's what I hear stuff, and I'll just send it to Anthony. I want this, and he gets it for me.
Yes.
Honestly, the way I hear most new music is through television. Usually
mine's
commercials.
Pandora.
Commercials or stuff
Thank
I hear on
God
TV.
Thank God for Shazam.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Shazam's
Pandora
a lifesaver.
And So You Think You Can Dance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can discover a lot of new music from them.
They use a lot of independent artists for their music.
Because it's cheaper.
Well, yeah, but that's a great... Christina What's-Her-Face that did...
Christina Perry.
That did Jar of Hearts.
Yep.
Nobody knew who she was.
She was unsigned.
Yeah, they used that on So You Think You Can Dance, and it got downloaded like crazy that night.
I discovered Bruno Mars's Runaway Baby on So You Think You Can Dance.
There you go.
And that song put it over top for me to actually purchase this whole album as opposed to just buying like three singles.
Because you and I do the three song test.
Yeah, exactly.
three song test?
That's what I used to do back in the day. I would wait. If I liked all three singles off it, three or more, that would be, okay, I have to get the album now.
Yeah, exactly. If there were less than three songs that were good from the album, then it wasn't worth buying. It had to be at least three good songs for me to buy the whole album.
Cool. A nice transition from music into this next one. Let's talk about YouTube.
Uh-huh.
Especially right now, something that's kind of big in Anthony and I's life, Postmodern Jukebox.
Yep.
Where you see a lot of them on YouTube.
YouTube has what I think the effect that it's had is it has made it easier to discover more out there, and it also has given more people a forum.
And it's also made it so much easier to see stupid cat videos.
Yeah. And it's made a workday go by so much quicker.
If there was a downside to YouTube, and I say this as a television producer and a comedy writer, it has turned people's attention spans into nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very
absolutely
true.
Especially for comedy. Nothing.
Yeah.
We put a short film online years ago that got great acclaim. Don't get me wrong. It was, you know, it was top 10 on Funny or Die. It got shown on the big screen Comic-Con weekend. We had great success with it, and it made us a lot of new fans. It's called Geek Sex. Seek it out. But I was reading some of the comments on it, and there was this one woman who said that she watched the first 10 seconds and it was so boring she couldn't continue.
10 seconds, people. 10
seconds. That is barely past the opening credits.
Yeah. Like, you don't even have time to wait for the skip ad part. You know,
and it's an 8-minute film.
Maybe you're just watching the ad.
It is 8 minutes long, and after 10 seconds, she couldn't hang.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
Right? Yeah. And I was just like, this is the YouTube generation.
And also, the you know, the phrase is never read the comments.
Well, yeah, there's that too. But I'm a masochist.
But from YouTube, we get the term going viral.
Yep. Yeah,
this has gone viral.
But I hate it because like the new viral video. It's like this is the first time you're showing it's not viral. You're using that term wrong.
That does bother me as well. Just because you put it on the internet does not mean it has gone viral.
Also, it seems to be making celebrities out of just random people.
Yes, but I think also, though, I think it gives people the appropriate amount of celebrity.
Does it?
And unless your name is Justin Bieber.
No, but put
it
this way.
I think it gives people too much.
No, well, yeah, but we do.
It just gives them their 15 minutes a lot quicker.
Exactly. Do we still remember who Tay Zonde is?
Who?
Chocolate Rain. Exactly. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Well, that's what I love about the episode, because we have to bring it back to Trey Parker. South Park.
Yeah.
Where they get Butters to do the what in the butt.
Yeah.
And they go to try to collect their virtual dollars, and exactly. They have all of those people there.
Yeah. And so I'm saying, like I said, appropriate amount of celebrity. And don't get me wrong, it's the wrong type of celebrity, whatever, what have you, but it doesn't last for long.
Well, it makes these people's careers as disposable as those videos.
Right, exactly. And look, we still don't do Harlem Shake videos, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's an appropriate amount of time, I think.
And one thing I do love is that, like, it gives, people this creative form, because there's so many just weird, random things you will find on YouTube that you would never have found 15 years ago. Like, the He-Man singing four non-blondes is, like, once a week, I have to watch that.
God bless our remix culture.
For me, mine would be the parody from Book of Mormon, The Hello, but into Harry Potter.
Oh, that was so good.
That one is so funny.
There's a million videos on YouTube that I absolutely love, and I play all the time.
And there's sometimes, you know what? Like, if I don't own a song, and it's like, crap, I need to play something, or if I'm on my phone, and I really should buy these songs, but, like, you know, when Lily is being crazy, she loves Happy. I go to YouTube, type search Happy, put it on,
and that's another example of how the industry's been able to make this work, because when you click on that video, there's a link right below it to iTunes and Amazon where you can go buy the track.
I always try to go to if there's anything that is an official link, mainly because I don't want some janky ass thing that maybe halfway through changes or you get burned a couple times, you realize
Rickrolling, if you will.
Yes. Or another fun thing with YouTube.
Yeah. Well, no. But there are some people like the girl that was supposed to be cast in the upcoming Into the Woods movie.
Yeah.
Who was spotted singing on YouTube.
And she wound up on Ellen.
Right. I don't know. Those things just bother me for some reason. Like, sometimes it works out really well, and sometimes it just kind of meh.
It doesn't bother me, and here's why. Our world has become very expensive, and we have a lot of people in this world. Too many, if you ask me honestly. However,
are you talking about getting rid of, Durwood?
And what that means is, especially, because I always bring it back to me and the industry that I want to be in, where, you know, I want to be a professional performer and whatnot. And we're always thinking about how we're going to get discovered. And I like the idea that there's just another way for people to put themselves out there and to get seen. You know what I'm saying?
Like a podcast?
And unfortunately, sometimes it gets used irresponsibly. But I think there are some people who can't use it responsibly and for the right reasons. And I think ultimately good always trying to
read it. I do love a good video where a girl's trying to work a pole and falls on her face.
Yeah.
For those of you listening that know anything about us, we have a TV show called The House that's been on for about 15 years now, and sketch comedy. And
that's where the House of Pop Culture comes from,
right?
Isn't it?
Look at you putting that together.
It all comes together.
Seasons, ladies and gentlemen.
Right? So when Amy and I started producing this show in the late 90s, we used the only avenue that was available to us at that point, and that was public access. Yeah. And, you know, we got certified and started producing our show there. And, you know, it was something you had to know how to do. You had to have the know-how. You had to be able to use the equipment. You know, they didn't just let anybody do it. And as YouTube started to become more prevalent and more people were getting on there, and the production value suddenly became increasingly less important.
Yes. But also the quality of just easy to acquire equipment.
Right.
Became yeah. so much
and
more
I, And valuable. I had a lot of people say to Amy and I, they were just like, aren't you guys worried because this isn't a special thing anymore? Anybody can do it. And for me, I was super excited at the prospect that the playing field had become so level, because at that point, it just became a matter of whether or not your shit was funny.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I love that.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I hear you on that, and that's a really good point, because at some point it's like you can throw a cat in a funny video for as many times as you want to, but at some point really the cream
falling off stripper poles.
Don't true, yes, but the cream will always rise to the top. It's just a matter of
football in the grain heads.
We always forget how new this concept is,
right?
You know what I'm saying? So we're still working the kinks out, and there's still a whole lot of shit we're gonna have to mire ourselves in before we actually rise to the top.
And in all fairness, I mean, it's just, if once it's on the internet, it's there, you know. Yeah. People can find stuff, and I'm willing to bet most production companies and studios and whatever, they just have interns just scouring YouTube or whatever. Yeah. And I mean, well, I don't know if you saw the thing that NBC's doing with their whole pilot thing, you know, giving to the fans and, you know, produce, you know, something. And
we are aware of this. Another thing, it's something like that, though, Joe.
No one else should be aware of it.
No.
Do not do it.
Do not do it. It's Kickstarter.
Oh,
Kickstarter is probably one of the greatest inventions of all time.
You think so?
Can somebody explain it to me? Because I'm slightly familiar with it, but not quite all the way.
It's crowdsourced funding.
Meaning?
And
you
meaning,
put your idea up on Kickstarter.
Okay.
And, well, because I've actually listened to it. You put your idea up on it, and it's not just television or movies. I mean, there's all kinds. There's
music,
art shows.
Comics.
There's food. There's restaurants. There's all kinds of things on there. You put up your idea, but you do have to set a time, like a deadline.
And
like,
an amount.
And an amount.
And doesn't the project have to basically be a confined project?
It yes.
can't be an ongoing
It has to be a confined project, and you say, this is how much I need by this date, and you can set it to where people can donate $1 all the way up to your full amount.
Okay.
If you want to, and you can put incentives in there. When Mystery Science Theater 3, when Rift Tracks was trying to get money to do Twilight on the big screen, like everything had, like, if you donated $5, your name was going to be shown on the projection in the credits.
Okay.
If you mm-hmm. donated more than that, you got to sit in on one of their writing sessions. Like, there were different levels.
Like I believe Veronica Mars. I mean, that was like,
yeah, that was also Kickstarter
funded. With Veronica Mars movie, that was Kickstarter, and it was like, if you did, I think, like $10 or $15, you know, you got like a copy of the mm-hmm. movie or something. Okay. You know, there were certain things.
The first movie that I was in, Eternity, the movie, that more than half of their budget came from Kickstarter.
Right.
Nice. Okay.
So it is good.
You have to meet that amount by that time.
Right. Or you
otherwise, you don't get anything.
Yeah.
Like people.
But the best part is that you can go beyond that.
Yeah. You can. Yeah. You want a low ball. Just so that way
you get can meet it and you can get your money.
Because it might not be what you're asking. Might not be the full value of what you need to make happen. But, you know, if you just want to hit that, so at least you get some.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully people.
I have contributed to quite a few Kickstarters, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because you can contribute, like I said, as little as $1 on some of these.
Yeah.
And it's a way of being able to contribute, like we were talking about with music, but it's a way of any project being able to help contribute.
It's almost like really low-level investing, right?
Very, very, very low-level.
I kind of like that idea.
My it's only, because I was, when Zach Braff.
Zach Braff.
Thank you. Did to try to do his movie. I was actually against that.
Yeah.
I didn't.
That was some bullshit.
I didn't think that is not, to me, Kickstarter's not for him.
Yeah.
But is it for Veronica Mars?
I was on the fence with Veronica Mars.
Well, because I was going to say with him, because I thought it was fine, because
to me, he can get funding anywhere.
I disagree, because what has he done that's been highly profitable?
Well,
Scrubs.
Scrubs.
That was on the bubble so many years.
But it's been in syndication for years.
He's still getting residual checks for it.
Yeah.
He's still a name.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, it's...
can't tell me he doesn't have a house he can put up.
I would say you would think that he could at least get the meeting somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that where I'm coming from is, if he's gotten the meetings and it didn't work and he's exalted all his avenues and then he went to Kickstarter, which is what I understand that Veronica Mars, I think, did also, then I'm not so much against it. But if his first option was Kickstarter, then
it seems kind of promotional. But we don't know that was his first choice. And right, also, yeah. If people are willing to give him money, what's to say they shouldn't be able to give him that money?
No, you're right. And they should if they want to donate.
Great thing is you can choose whether or not to do it
right.
or not.
It just didn't seem like Kickstarter is the place for that to me.
I would agree with you. And I would assume that the people who started Kickstarter probably would agree with you. But I also think
I'm not saying he had no right to do it. But as someone who has had to scrape my entire career to make whatever money I could to pour into my projects, it got a hell of a lot of side eye from me.
Yeah.
I mean, I respect his right to do it. And hey... good for him. And Joe is absolutely right. People had the option of not, you know, but he had a fan base he could draw from.
Yeah.
I don't. And that, you know.
But that's the thing. I mean, in the end, how many people might have gone on there and then happened to stay on the website and see other Kickstarters and maybe donate to something they might not have ever gone to as well.
That's an excellent point.
He brought
a lot of people.
I think
he brought visibility to
it. You know,
I will
if
give
it
him
was
that.
Like Scorsese going on there or Spielberg going on there, all right, I need to
Lucas.
He doesn't have any say in anything anymore. So
Michael
it's like,
Bay.
No, it's like Disney going on and like we need to fund the new Star Wars movie. Please,
can you spare $5?
Okay, in all fairness, if they did that, they would make their budget like that because any Star Wars geek fan have some sort of
especially as they said if you donate you get your name in the credits. Oh my god,
we'll name a Jedi after you.
Could
if you
imagine you
donate $10,000?
Yeah. Give us $50,000, we'll let you be a stormtrooper.
Oh god,
you know how many people would do? Actually, there'd be a budget Kickstarter. Just give me $50,000 so I can be a stormtrooper.
And there'd be a lot of fat stormtroopers.
Yes, there would. Yes,
they'd myself to, included.
They'd be running.
They look like
stop.
A bunch of robot Stay Puft Marshmallow Men.
Well, apparently we doubled up the recipe on this clone.
But you should go on Kickstarter. I'm definitely gonna check it out. Yeah, really interesting. I got some ideas for Kickstarters.
I want to start now.
Oh yeah, no, they have everything on there. It's kind of crazy.
I'm gonna start a Kickstarter for my chicken wing eating contest.
Oh my god,
I'm the only one in the contest.
I feel so bad for you. like the internet is killing the music industry, are ebooks killing the book industry?
Published
books.
I don't think it's killing the industry. I think it's killing the art of reading.
I think it's killing Barnes and Noble.
It's killing the brick and mortar, the book, the actual holding a book in your hand. There are so many people. Like when you look at music and actual physical, like vinyl, how technically outdated is vinyl? Mm-hmm. And it's still here.
It's still around.
And
you gotta really look for it, and you'll pay out the ass.
Oh, and
for
it's not
it.
Even that. I mean, there are record stores everywhere. I mean, at least in San Diego. But I mean, okay, for shit that I listen to, you can find it everywhere.
Yeah, but I think that's different. There's a different sound between MP3s and vinyl.
But different people want to feel that paper.
I hear you, but I just think that's in my hand. And I think it's overrated, honestly.
Really?
Yeah. I think because when we read for what's on the pages. We don't read for what we're holding in our hands.
What about children's books?
What about them?
Illustrations.
Illustrations.
Okay, fine, cool. But we can't get those on our tablets?
Is it the same thing?
Have you had a toddler? would you want a toddler that to deal with your tablet?
Little sticky fingers all over everything?
That's why I wear condoms. But me, as an adult, personally, I don't mind reading books on a tablet. I kind of dig it. I enjoy not having all that space taken up by books.
I enjoy both because I like having
I have
a bookshelf
both.
With a bunch of books.
Me too.
There's something about that, and I like being able to read from a book. However, especially if I'm traveling or going somewhere, having like 60 or 70 books in like my little Kindle somewhere is great.
I think modern technology is a great thing sometimes.
So I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think they're both there and both great.
Here's one thing, and I don't know. This may be just me, or it could be a large segment of the population. I don't know. But for me personally, I actually have an easier time reading the printed word than looking at something on a screen.
I think there's a lot of people that concentrate on a screen. People have that. And especially if you have something more than just a regular book reader, when it like a Kindle Fire that has games.
Yeah.
And the internet.
Well, because whenever I fly...
Hey, what's going on Facebook?
Whenever I fly, I like to take a book with me. And I bought Mindy Kaling's book. And I bought a paperback copy of it. And she had her Kindle.
No, I didn't have my Kindle.
Oh, did you bring an actual book?
See, that's the thing.
But you do have a Kindle.
I do have a Kindle. But when I travel, I don't like to travel with my Kindle because I'm always afraid I'm going to lose it. So I like to leave that at home and I travel with an actual book.
But for me, I read the hell out of that book. And I'm not a terribly well-read person because I just don't have the time or the attention span for it. But
10 seconds.
Exactly. Yeah. And I do. I have a harder time reading things like on my phone than I do on a printed page.
On the phone, I can understand. That's a quite small screen. But if you actually have a tablet, which I do, and honestly, I read a lot of books via my tablet. And I find myself reading more now that I have a tablet than
I did with actual books. Some people, and at work, kind of dealing with this, but especially with the website and the kind of the contrast of colors of the background versus the words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are certain people that it certain ways that the contrast is they just can't read it. So
I do believe those are things that can be adjusted though, right?
But on I mean some just of in, them. On some, but also just in general, I mean it's some people just might just have a lot of hard time reading on that in general. So it's whereas just paper to paper.
I would just hate for the zeal for actual books to be just a reluctance to go along with technology as it advances.
I don't think it's a reluctance because I have a Kindle.
I don't think it is.
And I read more than anybody else in this room. I constantly read.
Yeah, you read too much.
She devours books.
You read more than the three of us combined.
Yeah, I read a lot of books. And I love having a book in my hand. I like seeing where I'm at in the book. I like... Sometimes, I'll be reading and be like, oh, I have to go to bed. I'll, flip a couple of pages and be like, no. You know?
That's something that, yeah.
And I love that. I love the anticipation of, I'm almost there.
There's something to the feel of a book. And to me, it's akin to, when you have digital music versus a physical copy. I fucking love reading liner notes. And I love LP art, and it's...
On my Kindle, when I'm reading an actual book, I can look at the book and go, okay, I'm, halfway there. Oh, I gotta stop right now because I gotta go to bed. But in my Kindle, it's like... I'm at 52%. It's so clinical.
And it's not the same pages, too. Where are you at? I'm at 723 of 75,000.
It's so clinical. I'm at 52%.
I just find myself disagreeing with every one of your arguments.
But
just
I also like to collect the books. There are certain series.
Having a library.
I do. The Sookie Stackhouse books. I love the cover art. So I have all of them. And I love actually having an actual book. And like I said, I do... I probably read more on my Kindle than I do an actual book just because I read so much. It's cheaper for me to download.
Well, and you have that BookFlix thing.
And I also have, Netflix.
She's part of a membership club.
It's like Netflix, but with books.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I can get rare books with that. So I also have that because I like the feel of a book in my hand. I'm sorry, Derwood. It's just...
No, I get it. I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's along the line. I mean, yeah, it's... I think both can go hand in hand. Physical books aren't going to go away.
No, they're not.
They're just going to be.
Thank God.
I think something that it won't affect any of us really. I mean, it'll affect me in probably about 15 years. But textbooks.
Yeah, are going to go.
And I know that a lot of them are already starting to go. They're still going to be effing way more expensive than they should be.
Yeah.
But they'll still be cheaper.
Yeah.
And
I think that's a good thing.
And then students aren't carrying around breaking their backs trying to, carry all the books.
See, that's not fair.
But what'll be shitty about that, though? They won't be able to sell those back. You know what I'm saying?
It'll be cheaper.
It'll be cheaper, but it won't be too. Yeah, but it won't be.
Because actually now, they didn't really have it when I was in school, but like being able just to rent books. Like they have, they have, you know, ways of renting textbooks now. That's a whole lot cheaper.
I wish I would have had that.
Yeah, I wish too.
Because there was nothing like the end of the semester where you sell your books back and get that $5 and you run and you go get a burger and it's the greatest day of the whole year.
And then they'll resell it again for $75.
Exactly, yeah.
Another thing that we're all kind of, I know Anthony and I are, and I don't know about you, Joe, I think Derwood, though, Instagram.
Love it. I love Instagram. Say what you want about Instagram. It's like, I don't care about seeing your pictures of food. All right, fine. Then don't.
but
Instagram, Instagram is about food and selfies. That's all it is.
Is it? Pretty much, yes.
Look, what the hell else is it for? Instagram is nothing but a self-chronicling of what's going on in your life. Exactly.
Honestly, Joe,
I disagree.
My Instagram is food, Anthony, Derwood, and Lily, your child. That's about it.
I'm not on Instagram, but the one thing I love about Instagram, and I'm not against Instagram at all. I'm just not. It's one of the few social medias that I'm not on. But it integrates with Twitter and Facebook, so many people post the pictures to Facebook from Instagram. So I see a lot of them.
I don't do both.
I don't like to cross the streams.
I do occasionally.
I want to tell you guys a little Cinderella story about Instagram.
Okay. Ooh.
And this is revolving around a friend of mine named Jay Wick.
Okay, everybody get some popcorn and settle in.
Now, Jay, he was a photography enthusiast. I worked with him.
Would you stop that?
And he was one of the first people I knew who was on Instagram.
Okay.
And he... Will you stop? And he basically started taking like photos of buildings and nature and stuff like that on his Instagram. He actually, because of Instagram, was featured in a photography book that someone was publishing. And he was also featured in a show. And he actually has a photography business now.
Oh, wow.
That he got because of Instagram. So check out 222imagery.com.
Okay.
And you will see his photographs because they are really amazing. Like, they're amazing stuff that he did with his iPhone.
Whoa. Now, that's a special case. Does that happen all the time?
Well, and I think
most of us are amateur photographers who just like to say, look what I'm eating.
But I think it was a great example of how...
Look at this chalupa.
It's so delicious. It's so much more than just selfies and food.
I will agree with you on that, but it's like what... Instagram is just like everything else in social media where it is what you make of it.
Yes.
Because he is a photographer, he used it as a tool to further his photography career. Mad props to him, and I'm glad that he did it. Somebody like me, who I'm not a photographer, I just like taking pictures of shit, and mostly myself. I enjoy, by the way.
Yeah,
I take pictures of myself, I take pictures of the food that I eat, too, and you know what it does?
They're very angry pictures.
By the way... we should all totally give out our Instagram handles.
Oh, yeah, we will.
Right here, right now.
Oh.
Reggie Swing, at Reggie Swing.
Oh, I don't know what mine is. What is mine?
Seriously?
It's the Warden... Warden 8, I think.
Christ.
I ain't got one.
Hold on.
What's yours?
You can find me at Helzapop.
Oh, you better spell that.
Hellzapop.
Yeah. But what it's turned out to be, and kind of accidentally, is a great chronicling of the diet that I started and its results.
Oh, okay.
Which I didn't intend it to be, but it kind of came out that way.
Amy is at the _ warden 08.
08. There you go. _
So yeah, get at us on Instagram.
My Instagram is pretty cool.
And
I've got great...
08 stands for the century that she was born in and sold her soul to the devil to still be alive.
The 8th century.
If I get 10 new followers after this on Instagram, I will start posting more naughty pictures just for you all.
Okay, don't do it now.
Pecs a plenty.
That's weird.
You should form a new Instagram, just pecs a plenty and...
But I also, like, with Instagram, I think it's the same thing as, like, a YouTube and means of producing, because at this point, everybody's got the same filters and the same thing on Instagram. It is sheerly a matter of your eye now.
Absolutely.
Of your creativity, how well you frame shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of love that.
Oh, yeah. There's that one we all follow called Shit I Ate Today.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
I love watching your food, dude. Whoever you are, I love whatever you eat. Where are you eating, dude?
Great photography of food.
Great photography
of food. He's based in Hollywood. He eats a lot on the Sony commissary.
And here's the thing, though. He eats a lot at the Gower Cafe. Why are you not going to Roscoe's, the one right on Sunset and Gower, dude?
Oh, I love that.
I want to see pictures of some chicken and waffles.
Sunset and Gower, Roscoe's.
So good.
Excellent.
So good. It always comes back to chicken and waffles with us.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also
right next to the waffle. Is right on.
In Hollywood. Mm. Love it.
Talking about food, I made an interesting connection in my mind when I was thinking about this. Back in the 80s, when music videos first started, mm-hmm. it killed a lot of people's careers. Because now you had to look at these motherfuckers. And some of them were not good looking.
Looking at you, Oates.
Yep.
But it did.
His career thrived after... Wow, my voice went weird.
You went through puberty there.
Yeah, I know. Wow.
Not even the hair on your balls could stand with you there, Joe.
But it did. Like, music videos did hurt a lot of people's careers. Because it was like, ooh, that's who's singing this?
Well, and people resisted it, too.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, now, speaking of food... you have a lot of celebrity chefs. You have shows like Top Chef and the Food Network and the Cooking Channel. And now you have to look at some of these people.
Yeah.
Is this hurting, like, real serious chefs?
I don't think so.
No. Do chefs now have to be our rock stars? Because you see them, they're all tattooed.
They have to be charismatic.
In all fairness.
But they don't have to be good looking.
I want my chefs to be fat.
Yeah.
That means they enjoy food.
Look, Iron Chef Batali is not a model,
but he's also not very popular anymore.
Well, I think it all goes through cycles.
His time has come and gone.
Yeah, exactly. Emeril Lagasse, also, his time has come and gone, and he also was not a looker, but he was charismatic.
But again, this was at the start of the celebrity chef.
It's with something like food, it is always going to come down to how good you are at what you do.
And I think it's less about being good looking and more about being able to bring people to watch a show. In other words, as much as we loathe him, Guy Fieri can get people to watch his show. Say what you will about him, he's charismatic. There are a lot of people that will tune in for that personality.
Apparently he's very big in the bear community. Rawr.
Oh. Not in this room.
But anyway, yeah. And hey, here's the thing, I gotta be honest.
And on that subject, Tom Colicchio, get at
And I gotta be honest, at this point, I don't think I've seen I've seen him cook one thing ever. And it was a jambalaya sandwich, and it made me want to throw up. All right?
Why? Was he shirtless while he was doing it?
I'm just saying, if you're going to make jambalaya, there is no need to throw it in between slices of bread. All right? But he has something about him that gets people to want to watch his show. And so I think it's less about being good-looking, because he's certainly not, and more about being charismatic. That's not modern times, I don't think. I think when you've had a celebrity chef, it's always been about their charisma, mm-hmm. honestly.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't have to give into that. You know, same thing with music videos. I mean, you know, Ani DiFranco is an independent artist who's been recording for 25 years, and she has never done a music video.
Really?
So, ever.
Huh.
Who's that now?
Ani DiFranco.
I'm joking. I know who she is.
One of the most successful independent artists of all time.
Isn't that James Franco's sister?
Would you stop?
She is Annie of Franco.
Something that happened here recently, though, and Anthony and I were talking about this, and with the internet now where everything is at your fingertips the second it happens. Like, we don't have to wait for anything anymore.
Yes, it's true.
When celebrities or comedians say things that upset everybody, and now we all demand the apology. We were talking about Joan Rivers the other day, and how people are all upset at her, and they're demanding that she apologize for
what
a joke.
I haven't heard about this either.
She made an off-color remark. Shocking, I know. About the Cleveland kidnapping victims.
She was talking about, it was the show that she does with her daughter Melissa, and she was talking about the guest bedroom, and she said that the girls that were kidnapped, wherever that was, probably had better accommodations than what she was having to stay in.
All right.
At Melissa's home. And people are like, oh my God, now you have to apologize and blah, blah, blah. And she pretty much said, fuck you, I'm not apologizing.
Love it.
She said, if I do apologize, the only person I should apologize to is Melissa, because it was her bedroom I was making fun of.
Here's the thing that I hate most about the internet, as it's made a whole lot of people think that their opinion matters. And that's why I think it's really shitty.
It's become easier to voice your outrage.
Exactly.
On anything. And the thing is, it hasn't made it so more people are outraged. It just makes it so everyone can hear the outrage.
And I think somewhere along the line, too, with people being able to voice their opinion, they've forgotten that there's nothing that says that you have the right to never be offended. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because there are many things that offend me and outrage me, oh, but you know
Justin
what?
Justin Bieber offends me with his very presence.
I go on with my day. Yeah, it's shitty that that happened, but I go on with my day. I don't demand an apology from them. They can suck my dick and go fuck themselves.
Yeah.
And I just won't support them in any kind of way.
I made a very flippant remark about the whole Joan Rivers thing because also I'm big on Tumblr. And there was something that made the rounds not too long ago about Joan Rivers, because she made a crack about Adele's weight. And you know, there was a talk show host overseas who basically told off Joan Rivers on the air, not to her face, but to the camera about like, fuck you, because Adele's a great person, blah, 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 blah. And with this whole thing with the kidnapping victims, I very flippantly said, I was like, wow, at this rate, it's almost as if we can't expect our comedians to be the bastion moral compass of this country. You know, and it's like if you're looking to people like Joan Rivers, if you're looking to people like Howard Stern, if you're looking to these people to be responsible with what they say, you're just not getting it.
Exactly.
You're just not getting, you know, Sarah Silverman is gonna say fucked up shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kathy Griffin is gonna say fucked up shit.
She also makes a living on it.
I do have to say, though, on the other side, is the problem is so many people now use it as a forum to just say fucked up shit. Oh, it's satire. No, that's not satire. It's just you saying something fucked up.
Yeah. Which I agree with. I think there's a difference between not thinking something is funny and something deserving your outrage. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you didn't think what Joan Rivers said was funny, you can just be like, that shit wasn't funny. You know, and you can not go see her show or whatever. I'll give you
a great example because, you know, I'm a comedian and I was, you know, still somewhat in the stand-up world when 9/11 happened.
Mm.
I've never, ever in my professional career made a joke about that because to me, there is nothing funny about that.
Right.
Does it mean that I have a problem with anyone else doing it? No. I mean, you know, it's an off-limits topic for me. Because I don't think there's anything funny about it, but I'm also not going to get mad at somebody else making fun of it because it's like, meh, whatever.
Well, here's my thing. I honestly would get mad at somebody making a joke about it. I've heard 9/11 jokes that I really didn't like. And you know what I did? I didn't laugh.
Yeah.
Well, and I think the other thing too, the fact that a lot of people will say offensive stuff because they think offensive equals funny.
Yeah.
Which is like, right. No. There has to be the joke in there. Yeah. There has to be something funny.
You forgot
funny.
The funny.
Well, I've said many times, the only thing that truly offends me is unfunny.
Yeah. But and I don't think somebody should have to apologize because they made a shitty joke.
Yeah.
You know? If you're bad at what, I don't think you should have to apologize because you're bad at what you do or you were bad at making an attempt at what you did.
Michael Richards.
I do think there are some things that people should apologize for where it's like, no, that was insensitive. You should not have called that person in the audience, their mom who is dying, C-word. You should not have said that. You should apologize for that. You're an asshole.
Yeah.
You know, but making a joke where it's like, you know, of a big media sort of thing, it's like, okay, the whole adage of tragedy plus time equals comedy, where it's like, well, where's that time? You know, people making, you know, World War II Pearl Harbor jokes or...
what, too soon?
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, jokes kind of about, you know, FDR in wheelchairs. Right? Mm. It's like, oh, too soon. It's like, well, no.
Well, but that's one thing that annoys me as much as I am on social media. I think a great example recently was back in December when Paul Walker died. Because like the minute I heard that news, I'm like, oh, here we go. The gun's gone off and the race has begun for who's going to make the dick move too soon joke.
Yes.
And they were all stupid.
Yeah. And they'll only do it and they'll tag it too soon. And it's like,
yeah.
Hey, look at me. I'm being controversial.
Yeah.
No, you're just being an asshole. That's not funny.
Yeah.
Well, that's, as you said, with the internet, everyone thinks their opinion matters. You don't.
And everyone thinks they're funny.
Yeah. And everybody thinks
they're funny. But they have a forum for it now.
Although I will tell you that the comments, especially Yahoo comments, are some of my favorite things in the whole wide world.
If you ever want to lose all faith in humanity, visit the comment section of any Yahoo story.
It doesn't even matter what the story is.
MSN is also good for that, too.
Oh, it doesn't even matter what the story is. The comments are fantastic. Fantastic.
And of course, the mother of them all, the YouTube comments.
Oh, yeah. I love YouTube
Although,
comments.
Like, there should, like, I've seen a cartoon online where, like, there are buttons, and one of the buttons on the keyboard was call everyone a fag. That's pretty much the YouTube mantra.
I do though enjoy sometimes when on Amazon when there's like this like really stupid simple project and then it's just like the comments are there like, oh my god, this changed my life. And like it's just like once one person does it, everyone starts copying it, and then you have like 20,000 comments about this product that you're like, wow, that even exists. But that's what it's there for, is these comments.
Along the lines of the hashtag of too soon, spoilers. Has the internet, is this the now the thing?
The worst side effect of the advent of the internet
is spoilers. And, it's not the death of the music industry.
And I'll say this, using now a show spoilers. That I know some a couple of us in this room like, Game of Thrones.
Yep.
Yes.
Well, one thing I am now actually, I was like, when I got into the show, I was not going to read the books. I was going to wait till it was done, mainly because I wanted to try and enjoy a show that is based off of something and not read the source material first. And two, I didn't want to have to sit around and wait a decade between books. Now I'm going to read it because assholes that watch the TV show are spoiling shit within seconds of it happening. Oh. However, people that read the book have known about this shit for decades and not said a damn word.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
TV watchers, you suck. Book readers, way to go.
Yeah. No, I've had to unfollow people on Facebook and stuff like that because, you know, I live on the West Coast. A lot of my friends and family live on the East Coast. And if they're watching a show, like, I've seen some people that will just give straight up spoilers, like series finale of competition shows. They will immediately blast out who won after the East Coast feed. And there are, and that annoys the shit out of me. And the other one is when people feel a need to give their fucking running commentary on Facebook every 5 minutes.
That's what Twitter's for, people.
Yes.
Even then, it's a dick move.
Get your social media straight, people.
Okay.
And even then, it's like, if I know you're going to do it, first, announce you're going to do it.
Yeah.
And two, so I can put you on a list that is the often live tweet shit so I can not see your shit.
Yeah.
Also, make sure you're posting Instagram pictures of the food you're eating while you're doing your commentary of that live thing.
And now it's time for Durwood's unpopular opinion. I agree with everything y'all have just said. I absolutely
So that is
do.
Your unpopular opinion? You
but,
actually agree
but
with us?
What I will say is I because I hear a lot of people complain about spoilers. And I think when it comes to the social media, we're... all of this shit is free. I think it is way more logical to start unfollowing people as opposed to complaining and forcing them to look. If on my Facebook, I feel I can put on there whatever I damn well please, because my Facebook is not for any of y'all. My Facebook is for me.
That's not true.
Now, what I'll say about that is I don't get my feelings hurt when you want to unfollow me because of the stuff that I put on my Facebook. It is not my responsibility to y'all to post shit that I think that y'all like. Now, however, that being said, I think people should...
This really is an unpopular opinion.
I think people should wait a day before they want to put their spoilers online. I mean, goddamn, that's just inconsiderate,
see,
really.
See, I do kind of agree. But my thing is, yeah, and I have said, you know, multiple times, like, all right, don't, you know, kind of follow these rules. At least let people know and don't, you know, if you're going to say it, I will unfriend you. However, if it is malicious and a
yes.
way of doing something, I will unfriend you in real life.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't fucking care.
No, and I'm right there with you. If you're just being a dick, because I know, trust me, I know there are some people who post spoilers just to be a spoiler, and that's a dick move.
I get what you're saying about the, you know, you don't want to have to... on your own social media, have to think about what everybody else is going to read and this, that, and the other. I agree you should do what you want. However, there is such a thing as etiquette.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. And I mind you, I don't believe that I am one who posts spoilers.
No.
You're not.
However, and I think there is an etiquette to
don't
it.
Watch the same
also,
shit
too,
yeah.
I also have, because I watch a lot of television. Besides the fact that I read a ton of books, I watch probably more television shows than anyone else in this room. I do.
Did I mention
Amy Meredith hasn't slept since 1988?
No, you've seen the list.
I know, but we'll go over it sometime. I think there's a competition that could be had.
You've seen the list.
I've seen the list, but I think I can...
It's three pages long.
I can holler at you. All I'm trying to say.
What I'm saying is this. Is that...
I got you all beating movies.
I know. Yes, Joe. I know... when something's going to be, like, I know when something's happening on a show that there's going to be spoilers. And I'm often behind a couple of weeks on shows because I watch so many damn shows. So I also take it upon myself to stay off of certain things. Like, I
award
do not,
shows, award we go shows radio
on
silent.
The West fucking coast that do not live broadcast. That
I stay off.
Bullshit.
I stay off of Tumblr. Tumblr is notorious.
I'm big on Tumblr.
Tumblr can go fuck itself.
It is notorious for spoilers, so I stay off of
Tumblr
that.
And Twitter are your
for me,
no
the
zones.
Thing is, and I'm not against spoilers because I remember when Lost was on the air, and you know there's so much going on with it. I would go out and try and find stuff out and like see what theories and stuff were, and I would get spoiled. Because I was searching for stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And that, again, that's kind of my thing.
I'm a big fan of when you're watching something and something happens, that very vague, like, oh, shit, where people that are watching it that know what happened, they know what you're referring to.
Yeah.
Because other people, but people that aren't caught up or aren't watching it, they have no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, so if you spoil me, like, the day after something happened, you're an ass.
I think
if I get spoiled a week after, that's my fault.
That's on you.
I hear you. Yeah.
That's my fault. I accept that.
I think we can actually give a debt of gratitude to Entertainment Weekly because they were really the first ones to appreciate and practice spoiler-free living. Because in their
I disagree. They have spoiled many a thing in their magazine.
But I found many times
they put up a thing that says spoiler alert.
No, they don't.
They spoiled the usual suspects for me.
Wait. Like when it came out?
Yes, when it came out. The usual suspects. They spoiled that shit for me.
Look how angry.
And fuck them for that.
Angry.
Before the last, when they were getting
close
to the last
I remember
Harry
when they
Potter
fucked up
one.
With Potter.
Yeah, and they basically gave away a couple major things. If you had not read the books, you did not know.
Yeah, but I had found like 20 years ago when I subscribed to it that oftentimes there'd be a part in a blurb being like, you probably shouldn't read any further if you don't want any
spoilers. Major ones, for the most part, they are probably one of the better ones, but yeah, they still fuck up.
Oh, I'm sure I mean, like I said, I remember
and
the Potter
I have
thing.
Definitely unfollowed, one of the writers on Entertainment Weekly actually, confirmed a Game of Thrones spoiler from a few weeks ago.
Wow.
That I had basically already figured out from seven people's vague reactions that I kind of figured it out, but it just confirmed it, but it was blatant.
So I guess I should amend my statement to saying that Entertainment Weekly were the first to address spoilers.
And Durwood personally.
Dude, I couldn't watch that movie.
Still
for
watch
years
the movie?
Because,
it is. Have you?
No, I've seen it since. But
I remember a few years
for
ago,
for a long time, I refused to watch it because it had already been spoiled. And so yeah.
Awesome movie.
Well, there you go. That was good.
That was that was enlightening. Quite a few opinions. Now,
we forgot about one major technology
that is
very important. Podcast.
What?
I don't know.
What's a podcast?
I don't know.
Does that have to do with aliens?
Never heard of it.
That's weird.
Is that
it's a sequel to Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Interesting.
Huh.
All
right.
If we missed anything or part of technology or that you disagree with some of our more controversial opinions.
Oh, you can email us at thehouseofpopculture@gmail.com.
Oh, yeah.
If you liked what you heard here, you can get a dose of our funny every day on your social media. You can add us on Facebook. We're on there. You can also follow us on Twitter. We are at Pop Culture House, or you can follow me personally, Anthony Donovan at Daboy, DABOY.
I'm at Reggie Swing.
The_Warden23.
Craze Dr. Scott.
We want to thank sound engineer Joey and everybody here at Don't Panic Studios, including K-Dubs, the Dog Pound, and them Chicken Heads. And we will see y'all next time.
That was good, guys. Y'all were kind of like smart there.
We didn't talk about my cassette Walkman.
Bruce Willis was dead the whole time.
What?